From Toronto, Canada, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrin.
Thanks for inviting me into your home, your long-haul truck, taxi cab, RV, camper, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. A special welcome to all of you listening in on the Conspiracy Show app, free download, by the way. Those listening to the Conspiracy Show on the podcast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn.com, iTunes, TalkZone.com. Those of you, of course, catching the live stream on YouTube through our HOA. And, of course, all of you listening in on one of our affiliate stations, wherever and however you're listening, welcome and thanks for your company. Our fine paranormal investigator, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, will join us at the bottom of the hour for our monthly paranormal news roundup. And we'll talk about a number of stories, including Alice Cooper, rock star Alice Cooper, and his plans to launch a hunt for a werewolf in Hull, England, and the possibility of a time traveler captured on video back in 1995 during a Mike Tyson fight. Plus some gruesome murders in a doll cemetery. That's all up and coming with Rosemary Ellen Guiley at the bottom of the hour. Victor Vigiani, the executive director of Zealand News Network, and Don Emilio Zeno, broadcaster and field investigator with the Mutual UFO Network in Quebec, both standing by to discuss. Well, this is a remarkable tale. When we talk about Canada and UFOs, many of us maybe could point to Shag Harbor, the incident in 1967, incredibly well-documented UFO incident. But there are others, and perhaps chief among them is the Place Bonaventure UFO incident, which occurred back in November of 1990. This may be one you're not familiar with. Well, you will be after the next 30 minutes when Victor and Don Emilio Zeno weigh in on that. Let me just remind you, coming up on June the 27th, that's a Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, Monday, June 27th, 9 p.m., the debut of Season 4 of The Conspiracy Show, the television program, Monday, June 27th, 9 p.m. Eastern, across Canada on Vision TV, and then for the next 6 weeks, running until Monday, August the 1st. And again, 9 p.m. Eastern, Vision TV, and you'll want to check your local listings to find out, you know, where Vision is on your cable provider. All right. Victor, or I should mention Albert Vinzel is here, of course, running our HOA, our Hangout on Air. And if you want to stream the program on YouTube, all you need to go is go to my Twitter feed at Richard Serrett, at Richard Serrett, S-Y-R-E-T-T. Find the tweet at the top of the feed with the HOA link in it. Just click on it. It's got big capital letters, HOA. Click on that, and then you are off to the races, and you are streaming this radio program on YouTube. Isn't it grand technology? All right. Don Emilio Zeno is specialized in the telecommunications business. He's had several positions as a radio host and in TV and web video. He was promoted to the Provincial Director of Investigation for MUFON in November of 2014. His dynamism and keen interest in ufology, as well as his ability to fluently speak several languages, made him a prime candidate for the position of Director of Investigations for MUFON Quebec. Don Emilio Zeno, welcome to The Conspiracy Show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Richard. How are you guys doing?
We're terrific. Thank you. And let me once again welcome Victor Vigiani, the executive news or the executive director of Zealand Communications and Zealand News Network. Victor, welcome once again.
Once again, a pleasure to be with you, Richard.
All right, Don, let's just jump in because time is tight. November 7th, 1990, a woman swimming in a pool at the Place de Bonaventure. What happened? What did she see? What transpired after that?
First of all, if you'll allow me, as I've requested beforehand, I want to thank you guys for having me on your show. I think you've got a great show, and it's always a pleasure listening to Richard Dolan. I just want to express my favorite words when dealing with UFO or AKA UAP language. I love to use conjecture, plausible. I paraphrase a lot, and speculation, a word that Richard Dolan has used several times, and this way you can never get in trouble. Now, as you well stated, I'm not an historian, I'm not a ufologist, for lack of better words, but I am with MUFON Quebec. And by the way, I'm the Montreal director. I'm not the state director, just to clear out things, because I know our good buddy Stu Bundy and Marc Saint-Germain are listening in. By the way, these are my personal views tonight. They're not necessarily shared nor endorsed by MUFON. And by the way, as an ex-radio host, please interrupt me in case I do not come up for air.
Not to worry.
All right, you can rest assured. I just want to make a quick opening statement, and then we're down to business, because I've got a lot to tell our listeners out there across North America. This is my personal opinion. The U.S. and Canadian governments, I think, are xenophobic. I know it sounds like my last name, but there is such a word, for lack of better words. When dealing with the UFO phenomenon, I sincerely believe that our governments are controlled by the almighty MIC regimes, which for newcomers is the military-industrial complex, a.k.a. shadow government. Now, I'm kind of hesitant, but let me say it anyways. It's plausible to say that they've been bull-crapping. Notice I retained the real word because I'm live on air. Bull-crapping humanity for the last 100 years with their above top secrets cover-ups. Now, my quest as an insufferable UFO crusader is to seek out the facts, whether in conjecture or not, and share them with the public. You know, guys, at this stage of my life, selfish extreme wealth is no longer my driving force. Like millions of believers out there, I'm going to try and contribute my services as a UFO investigator or reporter of some kind for the purpose of encouraging the more enlightened generation not to participate in what I call misguided secret agenda of the MIC, which is money, power, destruction of all those who interfere with their devilish agenda. You're going to accuse me of watching too many X-Files,
okay,
which I do, by the way.
No worries, but let's just jump right in because time is tight. Let's tell us, for those not familiar, give us a brief chronology of November 7th, 1990.
Right. Montreal's November 7th, precisely, 1990, UFO sighting was over a major downtown skyscraper, still called Place Bonaventure, okay? So what happened is that you had way above on the rooftop, on their near their swimming pool, you had dozens of onlookers that saw this gigantic craft, let's call it a craft, which was circa, according to sources, reliable sources, 10,000 feet into the air. You know, your run-of-the-mill UFO, huge, 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 and was kind of stationary, hovering, noiseless. I need to point out, noiseless. And all these people saw it. So they summoned the Montreal police force, and right away, Sergeant François Lippe, not sergeant, but the constable, went on his way and went on the rooftop, and he saw it with his own eyes. Now, you know that police officers and pilots are usually very credible people. You know, they don't hallucinate, they don't fabricate, and they don't fabulate. So just the facts, and the fact is that he called his sergeant at the time, which was his now retired chief of police, Rabai Masson, and he says, "Chief, you got to come up here. You got to come up here. You got to see with your own eyes." So Rabai Masson went up, and he saw it with his own two eyes, and he described it's all over YouTube in the last 15 years. He, and I paraphrase, he says, this craft way up there, and he mentioned 8,000 to 10,000 feet approximately, has to be the size of 3 football fields with all the pulsating lights, you know, run-of-the-mill UFO. And then what happened, he summons the RCMP, and then Sergeant Luc Morin from the RCMP comes up on the rooftop as well, and it's party time, and they're saying, what the heck is this, blah, 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 blah. So they called St. Hubert Airport and Dorval at the time, which is Pierre Elliott Trudeau Airport, radar people, and said, you guys see anything? Nope, 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 we don't see anything. So then they called the military base in St. Hubert, and they said, no, we don't see anything. But sure enough, someone contacted NORAD, which everyone knows the North American Air Defense, and they scrambled two F-18s, which they couldn't see them because it was dark, but the F-18s swished by and they heard them. And, of course, they were taking aerial photos, and that was the purpose of the F-18s. And the ship was still there, and the fact is that they took pictures. Then they called the La Presse, a journalist from La Presse, and Marcel Laroche, who took in those days with his 35-millimeter camera, took a beautiful pictures. And by the way, this is what I want to disclose right now. I've got copies of those original photos in safekeeping. And by the way, the police reports that were made by the RCMP and the Montreal Police Force, of which I've got certified photocopies, were allegedly confiscated by NORAD the following day. But guess what? There's copies lying all over the place in safekeeping.
All right, Don, listen, we're going to take a timeout. We'll come back and discuss further. Class Bonaventure UFO incident, November 7th, 1990. Victor Vigiani in studio, ZLAN News Network. And the aforementioned Don Emilio Zeno from Quebec MUFON. Back with more in a moment. Stay with us.
When you look at the sky, ever wonder if someone's looking back? This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett.
The Place Bonaventure UFO incident of November 1990. That is our subject. On the line from Montreal is Don Emilio Zeno, and in studio, Victor Vigiani from ZLAN News Network. Don, I mean, Victor was just telling me that this is very striking. One of the aspects of this sighting is the duration. This thing dragged on for what, 3 hours?
3 hours between 7 and 10 p.m.
All right. Now, just a point of clarification. Who came in and swept up some of these documents, and who did they take them from?
They took the documents from the RCMP, were the last people that had to surrender the documents. But you know, like...
Surrender them to whom?
To the NORAD people.
Okay. And how do we know this?
How do we know this? I've got certified photocopies of the police documents on both ends, Montreal and the RCMP.
Okay, but how does that prove that NORAD came in and took them?
Well, because I interviewed the chief of police on the phone when I reopened this case 25 years later.
Okay.
And he attested to the fact that that's what happened. And then when I teased him by saying, come on down, meaning chief police chief, are you sure? He says, look, guy, I know what I saw, okay? I'm a trained police officer. He kind of got mad, and I said, no, listen, I'm just doing my job. No problem. I categorically believe every word, and there's many, many witnesses, but here's the best one, okay, which I saved for last. Florian Kostash, who's a renowned world musician, violinist, happened to be playing there that night when he saw everybody running out of the hall in order to go up on the rooftop and see what the heck was happening. Now, let me tell you something about Florian Kostash. He's an abductee, an alleged abductee, fair enough, since a child. And he had a very close experiences with, let's call them extraterrestrials. Now, guess what? And this is conjecture, by the way. Was the UFO tracking down one of their abductees that night, or was it a mere coincidence? And this is something that I've got the whole report on Florian Kostash, which I have not entered on the CMS for MUFON yet until I completely investigate the ins and outs, but this is factual, all right? So, and all these people that saw the alleged UFO, alleged because I wasn't there, but I'm basing myself on all these reports, police officers and so on and so forth. So why did NORAD scramble? I mean, let's face it, guys, if this thing were a blimp of some kind, you think NORAD would scramble two F-18s at, you know, $50,000 an hour operating cost in order to chase a blimp? No. This thing was huge, and then it just took off, and so on and so forth. And the rest is history. And by the way, the photos that I'll be bringing over at the Alien exhibition in 2 weeks were verified by Dr. Richard Haynes. And I paraphrase what he said, is that the evidence for the existence of a highly unusual hovering silent large object is indisputable.
Has anybody, Don, correlated the fact that, you know, we saw, you know, I saw pictures of what you saw on one of the YouTube demonstrations. There was a power failure apparently that happened at the same time. Did anyone correlate that in the media afterwards in terms of this thing perhaps causing the power failure?
Well, power failure all over Montreal.
Well, my understanding on one of the reports is Hydro-Québec did report a power failure during that three-hour period.
Honestly, I wasn't aware of that. The the chief of police, Masson, did order the Twin Towers to shut their lights to make sure that, you know, it wasn't a reflection of any kind coming from the building pointing upwards. The report did state that whatever the object was flashing its lights downwards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we ruled out any reflections of any kind. This has been ruled out.
Yeah, because there was apparently a construction site close by that
right.
had towers.
They've asked the people to shut down the lights, which they did. It's all over YouTube. No, guys, this is a real UFO or UAP, and there's no denial. Too many witnesses, and now with Florian Kustash coming up, which I've interviewed a few times, it's really has become one of Canada's most famous UFO cases. And like I said, I've got original photos that I'll be bringing with me at the symposium, along with certified photocopies, forgive, I'm being redundant, which any journalist can verify and snap pictures thereof.
Have you had an opportunity to do an access to information request to NORAD to find out if they still have these documents in their possession?
Like I said, I haven't completed my case yet. Everything is in due process.
Now, because you're in possession of those, I mean... Is that legal? I mean, are you?
We'll soon find out. If they come and arrest me, I'm going to get free room and board.
All right. And anything else striking about how many pages are we talking about that were taken by NORAD? How many pages of documents?
Well, one report is from the Montreal Police Force, which has approximately 12 pages, and the other one is double that from the RCMP.
Okay, at what point was NASA called in?
Well, they were sent over this UFO researcher at the time, Bernard Guenette, worked with Dr. Richard Haynes. And Dr. Richard Haynes examined the photos, and that's when he concluded in 1992, like 2 years later, that this was a bona fide UFO, unusual hovering silent large. And he estimated that it was 540 meters wide, which gives out 540 times 3, which is about 1,600 feet wide in diameter.
My word,
half a kilometer.
Wide.
Some people said, listen, I've seen so many blimps in my lifetime. You know, I'm not a spring chicken here. I'm 61 years old. So you know what? It wasn't a blimp. It wasn't a reflection. It wasn't an airplane. It was noiseless. It's your run-of-the-mill UFO, period. And this is why I'm so fascinated by this case. And incidentally, I want to thank MUFON for authorizing me to reopen this case because without them, I mean, who am I? I mean, this would not have been possible. And I want to thank you guys again. I know time is running out. I want to thank you for having me on your show. I mean, it's great, and I know you've got thousands of listeners, and this gives us a very great pedestal. And I just want to say one thing, okay? Last comment, if I may, guys.
Yeah, go ahead quickly.
Thank you. I just want to give a comment on Hillary Clinton's alleged UFO disclosure.
All right.
She's elected president. May I?
Please, but if you can, limit it to 40 seconds.
30 seconds.
Yeah. 30 seconds.
Here's my take on this. MIC is so powerful that all presidents, I don't care if it's U.S. of A or anything, they have to do, they're merely puppets representing the MIC desire. She's not going to disclose anything. She's using this as a poker card. And guess what? If Trump were any intelligent, which I think he is, 1 week prior to the closure of the campaign, he's going to come out and say, listen, guys, even if I'm elected president, I won't be able to disclose anything regarding UFOs above top secrets. These are only poker cards. And for crying out loud, we're at a day and age where these politicians need to stop crapping over citizens that work so hard for their money. I mean, now, if somebody's listening to me and they want to put me in jail, like I said, that's free room and board. I'm looking for free room.
All right, let me throw it over to Victor here. He's got another question.
No, I just want to find out from you what you expect your investigation, you know, going back to this incident, Don, where do you expect this this investigation to go? What do you want from it?
What I'd like is for someone within NORAD to come out eventually and say, yep, that was a UFO and we hit it for whatever reasons. It's all tied in, of course, because NORAD is part of the MIC.
Is NORAD covered under FOIA? I mean, because it's a joint American-Canadian operation. Can you even make a FOIA request to NORAD?
Let me go out on the limb here, and if it gets me in trouble, so be it. It'll be part of my karma and destiny. Unfortunately, Canada is a small country compared to U.S. of A. Canada does whatever U.S. of A. tells it to do. I mean, let's face it, we're tied in like brothers and sisters on the same continent. Canada cannot, in my opinion, do what it pleases in terms of disclosure unless it gets permission from the MIC, which is Uncle Sam. Now, if I haven't done anything, I haven't said anything, and by the way, you'd never catch me crossing Area 51, not even for millions of dollars, because I know how not to break the rules. I'm just expressing an opinion for the sake of humanity, because people do not want to be lied to any longer. I don't care what the reason is. We want the truth. And if, you know, the MIC would say, listen, we're doing this to protect you by hiding the truth from you, fine, let's move on. Let's continue. Everybody continues working, paying their taxes, and life is one big happy camping ground. That's all I'm saying. And that's why people are irated, frustrated, and with all the BS that they've been throwing at us for the last many years. I mean, what can I tell you? It is what it is. Guys, once again, I know I'm running out of time. I want to thank you implicitly.
Not to worry, questions. But I'm curious about, you know, no radar corroboration from the airport. I mean, that's kind of interesting, don't you think? Why no sign on the radar?
People in the aviation industry are so scared of revealing anything when it comes to UFOs that they have very strict conditions, deny everything. But you know that the truth is out there. Again, forgive me if I sound like X-Files, but it is what it is. So people will not do anything, just like medias are controlled by God knows who. You've mentioned it before, and so on and so forth. And if I weren't self-employed as I am now, I'd probably be scared to come on air and talk about UFOs for fear of ridicule and losing my job. But this is one of the most beautiful thing of our century, is to be able to ad lib about, you know, the secrecy of UFOs. And you guys are doing a great job. Honestly, you know, I believe Richard Dolan that, you know, somehow the truth will come out within the next 10, 15 years. The baby boomers will eventually die off, and all this old BS of, you know, keeping secrets will be a thing of the past. And I challenge the younger generation, the millennials, to give us all a great future in terms of sincerity, honesty, and integrity. And let's move on to greater heights. I mean, that's what life is all about.
And you will be attending the Alien Cosmic Expo June 24th, 25th, 26th.
Yeah, Stu Bundy wanted me to get on stage. He's making a big mistake. I'm just kidding. To talk about the Montreal UFO experience. And like I said, I'll be bringing all the proofs, including the photos unless the men in black kidnap me on the way there.
All right, and you're going to be making a formal presentation, and you're hoping, yeah, obviously, that the mainstream media in attendance
yeah,
will pick up on the story, and perhaps, what, even you would give them permission to reproduce these documents?
Oh, yeah, because I've got the... By the way, these photos, original photos and photocopies, are made possible by Quebec's ufologist, François C. Bourbeau, who's been around... He's truly an ufologist, a very knowledgeable individual.
All right, let me work Victor in here one more time here. Victor, yep. Go ahead, Victor. There you go.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Don, if you are willing to put yourself out to put these documents in front of the press, if they're of a nature, of such a compelling nature, I think we just could have something here, because if you have a journalist with cold stock documents from NORAD or RCMP or the Montreal police, that is something to go on. So I think we've got something to work with here.
Well, I've obtained these certified photocopies from François C. Bourbeau, so I haven't done anything wrong. I definitely didn't go into the RCMP or Montreal Police Force archives and steal them. They were made possible by the latter. So, yeah, I mean...
Sometimes, Don, you got to do something wrong to get things moving. I think you've done that. That's great.
Have I really?
For sure.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In making something secret known, many people would say that's wrong, but, you know, that's not true.
We just have seconds here, but I should have asked this earlier, perhaps. But in your conversation with the Montreal member of the Montreal police,
yep,
who talked to you about NORAD coming in, did he give you any details about how that exchange went? I mean, were they rude? Were they abrupt? Were they aggressive?
No, they just walked in and they said, "From this moment on, we're NORAD. You know, they know the chain of command and how it works. NORAD has got clearance, top security, and they can take whatever papers they want from the RCMP all the way down." Took the papers, and that was it. And that was at highly public information. And then when I saw these papers 8 months ago, I said, "Holy crap, how did you get them?" He goes, "Never mind, I'm a ufologist, journalist, never mind where they came from." Wow. I couldn't believe. I mean, it was like, you know, I was in ecstasy, because I'm passionate about UFO matters, especially the Montreal UFO incident.
Right, right.
And this is why I'm going to bring all this stuff with me. And there's other photocopies. They've got negatives. I mean, everything is in safekeeping. So even if they beat me up and beat Bourbeau up, there's other people that have safekeeping. So anything happens to us, you'll know that... they're on to something that,
all right,
they don't want the public to know.
Don Emilio Zeno,
yeah,
Quebec MUFON, thank you so much for this, and we'll see you at the Alien Cosmic Expo.
You bet. You have a nice...
Thank you. Victor Vigiani, thank you once again. Zealand Communications.
Always a pleasure to dig deep into this stuff.
Give us a website.
Zealand Communications. Just Google that, or Zealand Communications Blogspot.
All right. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, our paranormal investigator, standing by with some terrific stories. We'll get to those next when the Conspiracy Show continues.
The truth is not out there. It's right here. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett.
Welcome back. Just a reminder, next week on the broadcast, John Guandolo, former FBI agent, will be here to talk about... radical Islamic terrorism, and also those missing 28 pages from the 9/11 report, and whether they may hold the key not only to our understanding of what really happened on 9/11, but perhaps provide some insights on how we can prevent something like that from happening again. John Guandolo. Then, two of the principals, well, the two principals, really, the writer and the illustrator of a brand new comic book series called Cryptocracy. These are two gentlemen, very well known in the comic book world, and they've sort of launched out on their own with this new series. And the very first issue features yours truly. Not a huge role in the comic book, but I am featured on one of the pages. And we'll tell you all about Cryptocracy next week on the program. Now, just a programming note, and thank you for Albert for reminding me this. Last week, when we had Leo Wanta on the program, along with his editor and producer, Lon Gibby, they mentioned a piece of audio tape, a telephone recording that they have, which is really revealing it is allegedly, I believe, a former U.S. U.S. governor, I think, from the state of Tennessee, and a senator in the United States, who were essentially caught on this audio recording, asking for sort of their share of Leo's trillions, asking for sort of a kickback, I suppose, if you will. And I had mentioned that I was hoping to play that on the program, that an excerpt from that audio recording. We're not going to do it this week. We don't have time. But next week, perhaps in the second hour, I will play excerpts from that telephone audio recording that Leo Wanta, the $31.2 trillion man, mentioned. All right. Let's talk paranormal. Rosemary Ellen Guiley is our regular contributor, of course. She joins us every month at this time, the author of more than 60 books, many of the major encyclopedic works on the paranormal and the supernatural. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, the website visionaryliving.com. Rosemary, how are you?
Well, good evening, Richard. I've just gotten back from a wonderful weekend in Baltimore. I was a speaker at Fort Fest again this year. And the Fortians, as you may know, are people who are intensely interested in everything unexplained. And I've been part of that organization for quite a long time. So it was really a stimulating event.
All right. I want to talk to you about this this doll cemetery and some gruesome murders that have taken place in the doll cemetery. The interesting thing is we're not really sure where this doll cemetery is.
Well, I'll tell you, Richard, this story has a lot of problems. And first of all, there's no location for this doll cemetery. It made the rounds on the Internet, and there's British spelling in the story, and so people speculate that it might be in England, but it's definitely outside the U.S. But this story has all the hallmarks of either a hoax or urban legend. And one of them is the lack of a specific location. Supposedly, there's this creepy doll cemetery. Nobody knows how it started, but discarded dolls have started being dumped there, and it became like a burial ground for all kinds of dolls. Well, dolls are creepy to a lot of people, so there's that instant creep factor right there that something supernatural could be going on. And then the story goes on to relate how some girls, three girls, are rather gruesomely murdered. They go missing, and they're found there in the cemetery, and it seems to be tied to an old caretaker. No names, no dates, nothing that can really be tracked down by records and facts. And so it's a great story, but I really think it falls into the category of an urban legend.
It does sound reminiscent of the Island of the Dolls, which is in, I can't pronounce the name of the town, but it's in Mexico.
Yes, a similar story. And it also bears a lot of similarities to other teen violent and urban legends like the Red Hook. That's another cemetery story. And there are variations of that. It's a teenage boy and girl go to a cemetery to park and make out, and they're in their car, and this hook slams down on the hood, and it's related to the ghost of a murder victim, and they're gruesomely killed by this hook. I think it's a story intended mostly to scare teenagers.
Well, it does have all sort of the trademarks of an urban legend, as you say. However, as you have pointed out many times on this program, and that is that dolls are one of the most commonly haunted objects, correct?
They are, and I've done a lot of research on this, and my co-author in Haunted by the Things You Love, John Zaffis, who has a paranormal museum, and you know we've talked about it on your show, the number one item that lands in his museum as a result of cases of haunted objects, dolls, and the clown dolls especially. I think it's because dolls really act as substitutes for human beings. They're made in human image, of course, and people often invest them with an extension of their own personality, or they imagine personalities around the dolls. And they seem to be very susceptible to housing spirit activity.
Rosemary Ellen Guiley is with us. She joins us this time every month for our paranormal news roundup. And her website is visionaryliving.com. And we're heading into a break here shortly, but perhaps we'll start the conversation now, continue after the break. And that has to do with this werewolf sighting in Hull in the United Kingdom. And rock legend Alice Cooper, of all people, apparently is launching or organizing a hunt for this creature. We will talk about it when we come back. Rosemary Ellen Guiley stays with us right here on The Conspiracy Show.
Keeping an eye on the New World Order. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett.
All right, welcome back. Rosemary Ellen Guiley is with us. And next month, Rosemary is going to join us for the full hour. You've got a brand new book out relating to the Ouija board. Tell us about that, Rosemary.
The book is The Zozo Phenomenon, and I've co-authored it with Darren Evans, who's been collecting Zozo information for a couple of decades now. And Zozo is a negative entity, possibly demonic. We explore the origins in the book, but a negative entity who seems to prefer the Ouija board for its access to people. And unsuspecting people who use spirit boards and Ouija boards, whether they're commercial or homemade, sometimes have rather terrifying and unsettling encounters with this entity that in some cases literally takes them over. So we tell Darren's story, his own deterioration at the hands of this entity and how he recovered from that. And we dig into a long history to try and uncover exactly who Zozo is and what it's doing.
All right. What do you make of this story? Alice Cooper has gone on Facebook appealing for more information about these claims of an 8-foot werewolf running around in Hull in the United Kingdom. And the locals there have dubbed this mystery creature the Beast of Barmston Drain. What can you tell us?
I love this story. I have collected dogman and werewolf sightings for years, and they do go in waves. So here in England, in an area that has a history of dogman sightings, and I prefer the term dogman because these creatures are bipedal and they run on all fours. They look like combinations of humans and wolves, which is a more accurate term than werewolf. And this is an area that's had a long history of sightings. They call this beast Old Stinker because it's been said to have very foul breath. And people have seen it up on two legs. They've seen it running on all fours. There were recent reports that a couple saw it eating the carcass of a dog and that it had the capability of jumping, just springing way up over a fence to get away. It has a lot of similarities to the Beast of Bray Road, which has been seen in primarily Wisconsin and Michigan for a long time. And I've also researched sightings of a similar creature in upstate New York. And the strange thing about these cases is that they do go in waves. And, of course, werewolf lore is tied to the full moon. But there seem to be flaps, just like UFO flaps, and like Mothman was kind of a flap, where something happens in the veil between dimensions or worlds, and there's a rash of sightings. And that seems to be what's happening now in this area. And Alice Cooper, the rock star, being a big aficionado of the supernatural, he's put out a call. He wants to get to the bottom of it and get reports.
Often these dogmen sightings in the UK are centered around ancient structures like Stonehenge, etc. Is there any of that going on in the Hull area in the United Kingdom? This is a small town, Hull. I've not heard of it, but are there any ancient structures in that area, do we know?
I'm not really sure because I'm not that familiar with Hull itself. I've never been to Hull. I have read about Old Stinker in the past, and as an aside, the folks in Hull are a little upset because they're trying to be the city of culture, currently in Britain, and werewolf sightings just don't do for something like that.
No.
But it is a good point you bring up about the ancient structures, because people have speculated, and dowsers in particular, that these structures are built on highly energized land, that there's something about the configuration of the land that's a very unusual energy. And they are often these portal areas where people have all kinds of otherworldly and interdimensional experiences. They might see mysterious lights in the sky, or ground lights, orbs, ghosts, apparitions, mysterious creatures. And so a lot of these things all go hand in hand in an area. And the fact that Hull has had a history of this, which extends back, you know, in time, I would say that there's something going on there about the land that is a magnet for this kind of activity.
What about the possibility that we're talking about a skinwalker here?
It could be a British version of that. Skinwalkers technically are, in Native American lore, sorcerers who shapeshift into various animal-like forms, including dogmen. But when you look at the characteristics of the beasts themselves from place to place, there are a lot of similarities. You know, as I mentioned, the comparison to the Beast of Bray Road, and the case that I've been following in upstate New York isn't quite like that, but it's more like the famous case from France, the Beast of Gévaudan, that took place in the 1700s. And so I don't think it's these beasts that go from place to place, but there are certain characteristics that are similar from distant location to distant location, which to me is an evidence of the existence of these creatures, and that they are tied to Earth. They're another in another dimensional reality.
So how serious do you think is Alice Cooper about that, about this? I mean, is he actually going to try and organize a hunt? Is he going to go over there himself?
It remains to be seen. And, you know, he's not the only rock star who's ever been interested in the supernatural. You know, in the Zozo phenomenon, we talk about Jimmy Page, who was fascinated, the lead guitarist for Led Zeppelin.
Sure.
Who was fascinated by the occult. He owned a lot of works by Aleister Crowley, even bought Aleister Crowley's house that he had lived in at one time in Scotland. He didn't spend much time there, but he owned it for a while. And
which recently burned down,
didn't it? Music and the supernatural cult that go hand in hand.
I'll say.
So whether or not Alice Cooper is just sort of riding a publicity wave here, or if he's going to get really serious about it, he's at least galvanized interest in the topic.
All right. Now, this is an interesting story. Here we go again with another one of these incidents, supposedly, where a time traveler is caught on video. In this case, we have a video. This is a clip from a 1995 Mike Tyson boxing match in Las Vegas. Again, back in 1995. And in the front, well, maybe in the first couple of rows, you can see this gentleman, and he seems to be holding up a very thin sort of kind of a smartphone, and it looks like he's pointing it and looking through it almost as if it's a camera phone. Now, what's the big deal there? Well, this is, again, this fight took place in 1995, and the first camera phone was sold in the year 2000. So what do you make of this story, Rosemary?
I'm a little on the fence about it, Richard. I do believe in time travel, by the way. There have been some very interesting cases that are hard to explain away. But for one thing, this device, this camera device, doesn't look very distinct. It's kind of hard to make out. And there have been people who have found photographs of early digital cameras, early cameras, that have a very strong resemblance to this. And I really feel that this is a case of mistaken identity. But I do believe in time travel, and we have some other interesting cases of that.
I remember it was a Charlie Chaplin clip that came out a few years ago as well. And there was a, it looked to be like a woman walking in front of a movie theater. I believe it was a Charlie Chaplin film clip. And she's holding up something to her ear that looks remarkably like a cell phone. Do you remember that?
I'm a little foggy on the details on that.
Yeah. This came out maybe five, six years ago. Do you remember that, Albert? It was on YouTube, and this woman, I think she was walking in front of a movie theater, or she was walking in a park, and she was holding her hand up to her ear, and it looked like she was muttering something, and it looked all, for all the world, again, this was a clip from the 1920s, like she was talking into a cell phone, and not a big, you know, big, clunky cell phone, almost like a smartphone or one of those small flip phones.
All right, I do remember that story now, and I thought that was very intriguing. I thought that was more unexplainable than this particular clip. To me, one of the most interesting cases still on record comes from 1992 in Baltimore, where I just was, where a man was arrested for vagrancy. He was wearing 19th century clothing. He gave his name, said where he was from, as Morris Winthrop, the Morris Winthrop case. He had other items related to the late 19th century on his person, and he was put in a hospital, like a mental hospital, for observation, and then suddenly vanished. He just literally disappeared right out of his room. And the doctor who had initially interviewed him was so intrigued by it, he did some research and discovered that there had been a man in New York City, where this man said he was from, in the late 19th century, by that name, who mysteriously disappeared one day. So we have these intriguing cases, and the technology seems to be transported, too. Here was a man who had a 19th century gun on him and clothing and other items that gets transported into the present. And so we have to think that items from the future, even our present, could be transported into the past.
Indeed. And talking about leaps, you know, technology or technological leaps and bounds, this is a kind of a scary story, quite frankly. And this is scientists, I believe it's in India, who are seeking to bring dead brains back to life, reviving a dead brain. What do you make of this?
It's technology that is bound to happen. I think that we're going to increasingly push the limits on death, and this is going to have a lot of legal ramifications. This research is using stem cells in order to literally regenerate brain-dead people, and experiments, you know, actually running on people who have been legally declared brain-dead. And the article points out that nobody seems to be objecting too much to this yet, but if this ever became a commonplace practice, it might be kind of a scary proposition to a lot of people. The one thing that I think of is that here are these people who, for various reasons, through injury or illness, trauma, have been rendered brain dead, yet they can still be maintained. And what if their brain is resuscitated in some Frankensteinian manner? From brain dead and to, like the article describes, well, we could get them into a coma and then maybe we could get them into, you know, some at least minimal stages of conscious awareness. What would they be like?
Exactly.
Would they
sound Frankenstein.
Return to full functioning, or would they be literally like zombies? And the question is raised in the article.
Absolutely. It does sound like Frankenstein Revisited, and it's called the Reanima Project. We'll keep our eye on that. Rosemary, thank you for this. We'll talk next month.
Thank you, Richard. Good night.
Good night. VisionaryLiving.com, the website. All right. Thank you all for listening. Albert, Jonathan, Jamie, I'm back next week with a brand new program. In the meantime, don't be afraid. There's nothing concealed that won't be revealed, and nothing hidden that won't be made known. Would I speak in the dark, speak in the light. What you hear in a whisper, proclaim from the rooftops. Move over, Aphrodite. I'm coming home. Good night.